It's being called Britain's Summer of Strikes. Tens of thousands of workers across different sectors have walked off the job. They want better pay and conditions to combat record high inflation. Will businesses and government leaders meet their demands? This is Inside Story. Hello there and welcome to the programme. I'm Laura Kyle. Workers in the UK have launched some of their most disruptive industrial action in years. With living costs hitting a 40-year high, they want more pay and better conditions. Tens of thousands of transport staff, postal employees and even lawyers have walked off the job. And for the first time in 30 years, dock workers also went on strike at Britain's largest container port. Trade unions accused business leaders of putting profits ahead of workers. But the government says union bosses are holding the country to ransom. We'll bring in our guests in just a moment. First, Harry Fawcett has more from Felixstowe Port in the east of England.
The world's largest container ship at Britain's largest container port. The Everalot arrived on Thursday and normally would be long gone by now. But strike action by Felixstowe's 1,900 dock workers has stopped operations. The Unite Union says a recently increased offer of a 7% pay rise doesn't keep pace with spiralling inflation. It's seeking a double-digit raise that it says would share surging corporate profits, $71 million at last count, more equitably with the workers.
Now, unfortunately, we've yet to be given an offer which we think we can take back and which reflects our members' aspirations. And talking to our members today, and you know, which we're in a position to do, as you can see, we've had that message sent back to us loud and clear.
Felixstowe Port says it was reminded in recent days by the Bank of England of the inflationary effects of big pay rises. The port company accuses the union of using the workers in a national struggle.
On average, for our workers, this is an extra £3,500 in cash to them each year. The action that they're taking now that Unite is making them take, and Unite haven't put this offer to our workers, but the action that Unite is making them take is actually going to take the best part of £1,000 out of their pocket.
The question is how far the effects of this shutdown will ripple through the UK economy. The port says the effects will be manageable, pointing to the lessons learned during the supply chain disruption of the pandemic. Certainly the Everalot isn't going anywhere anytime soon, and some industry analysis suggests other container shippers are already offloading their cargo in Europe instead of the UK. The union accepts there will be major disruption and says that it could carry out further strikes as it seeks what it says is a fair deal. Up the road in Ipswich, Adam Scott's printing and embroidery business relies on imported materials, textiles, ink and vinyl. He supports the right to strike, but is worried about further shocks to a supply chain that's already stretched and only getting costlier.
Historically, where we'd have maybe two price rises a year, you know, sort of 2-3%, something like that, we're now looking at, you know, 8-10% price rises monthly from our suppliers. So it's, I'm not gonna lie, it's a challenging environment for us over the last sort of year.
This Sunday's cargo at Felixstowe was restricted to day trippers. All sides are settling in for a long wait for this dispute to be resolved, and it's just one among many. A long summer of industrial action and economic uncertainty isn't yet over. Harry Fawcett, Al Jazeera, Felixstowe.
Well, the nationwide strikes have brought parts of Britain's rail network to a standstill and caused days of disruptions. Only one in five trains were running on Thursday and Saturday. London's underground transport has been hit by four 24-hour walkouts this year. That's had a knock-on effect on other services where there weren't any strikes, including the Eurostar. Criminal lawyers and rubbish collectors also stopped working. And it's not just the public sector. Private companies are also being affected. Staff at telecoms giant BT stopped work for 4 days at the end of July for the first time in 35 years. Amazon warehouse staff have also staged walkouts. And some proposed strikes have been halted after pay deals were agreed. These include some by British Airways ground staff and plane refuelers at London's Heathrow Airport. But other workers are holding firm. Postal staff plan action later this month. And teachers and health workers have hinted at possible walkouts if they don't get pay deals they consider acceptable. Let's bring in our guests at this point. And all of them are joining us from London. We have Stephen Cotton. He's the General Secretary of the International Transport Workers Federation. Pushpin Singh is an economist at the Centre for Economic and Business Research. And Giles Kenningham is the founder of the public relations agency Trafalgar Strategy and former head of press at the UK Prime Minister's Office from 2015 to 16. A very warm welcome to all of you. Stephen, let's start by just discussing why all these strikes are happening right now.
Thanks, Laura. I think, we've got an extraordinary situation. I think you mentioned in the presentation that transport workers, wherever they fit, rail, dock workers, truck drivers, all did their part through the COVID period. And now we're hit with enormous levels of inflation, not seen for 40 years. And frankly, people are extremely worried about meeting their bills and their commitments at a time where there's clearly a void of leadership in the politics in the UK and no ready solution. So all of the cases you mentioned are actually strikes voted on by the workers themselves. So I think the message to a global audience is workers have had enough. They did their part through COVID, and now they recognise extreme increase in costs off the scale, and they're asking for a just and fair, equitable solution.
Pushpin, do you agree with that, that workers, that people, the society at large, is facing extreme rising costs and that this is an unworkable situation if it continues as it is?
For sure. Like I mentioned before, inflation is almost definitely at a 40-year high and is spiraling out of control. I think the most recent data on earnings as well shows real pay decreasing by 3% compared to the last year's quarter two. And that gap between inflation and earnings have never been higher since records started two decades ago. So definitely a lot of it is spiraling out of control, and a lot must be done to help households actually manage the bills and actually survive this cost of living crisis. Mm.
Charles, where is the government in all of this? There is a gap there. People, workers are feeling that they use strikes as last resorts. They've tried to negotiate. They don't feel they're getting anywhere. Why not?
I think it's very difficult. You know, we are living through unprecedented times. You've just had the government offer, unprecedented package of intervention during COVID. We've got to pay that money back. They're just trying to get the economy back on its feet. Now we've been hit by these sort of 40-year high of inflation, partly fueled by the war in Ukraine. So to some extent, they are between a rock and a hard place. We're going to have to pay for this at some point. And is affecting everybody across the board. But, you know, if they do, I think, give in to these demands, then you're going to have more pain down the line across the board. You know, and it's not just, the public sector workers. People in the private sector are facing these challenges as well. And there isn't, to coin a phrase, a magic money tree. They can't just keep bailing everyone out. They've already put out I think it's a £400 package for households hit by the rising cost of energy in October. They've got also a number of one-off payments for different groups hit by the surge in energy prices. So it's very difficult. But, I mean, the politics of this are, I think at the moment, public sentiment is probably with the government. A lot of people can see that, you know, we've been going through these very difficult times, and there is pain coming down the track. Of course, if this does spread and we have this almost unprecedented situation where, you know, as we talked about, criminal barristers, could it hit the teachers, other public sectors walking out, then, you know, it is a huge political danger spot for the government, because at some point, I suspect the public's patience will run out.
Mm. You raise a number of different points there that I want to pick up on. One of them, Stephen, Giles saying public sentiment is with the government at the moment. Do you agree with that, or do you believe that you've got the support of the general public?
Well, I think we probably move in different circles, if I'm frank. The reality is most people are very, very concerned about meeting their bills. So the public sentiment, certainly from our experience with our affiliates, Unite, RMT, ASLEF, so those are rail and the Felix zone strike, is that there's a lot of solidarity. And, Felixstowe has been one of the most successful ports. The first strike in 30 years probably says it all. There's been a very responsible approach to industrial action. And the reality is, the ideological comment, Giles, if you mind me picking you up, is give in to this. I think the reality is people see so much wealth accumulated in the top elements of our society, and we've heard all of these companies taking share dividends. These are extreme sets of circumstances. The cost of living is a 40-year high. We need to look at this in a different way. Workers collaborated throughout the pandemic to keep those that are in the global supply chain, to keep the world moving. We think and we believe that the transport workers and today's workers should be shown the same level of respect in a moment of crisis. We should be looking at how do we come up with economic fiscal approach to help distribute the wealth. You cannot take so much money out of people's pockets per month and not expect a reaction. So for us, all the feedback we have, all the chat rooms that we're party to, have a look on Twitter, there is a very strong sense of injustice for people who feel that their money's being taken out of their pocket and they don't have any control over the situation.
Pushpin, what do you think of that? Do you agree that there is enough money to go round, that there is enough money to combat this situation in the UK right now, but it's just concentrated in the wrong places?
I think definitely it's going to tax a lot on the government finances and the treasury. As mentioned before, a lot of spending was done during the COVID to help a lot of workers, a lot of key workers, a lot of workers were distressed during COVID to get through those times properly as part of the furlough team, pandemic support and whatsoever. Now we are faced with an unprecedented inflationary environment where more spending needs to be done. Definitely it's going to tax the treasury a lot, and if there's going to be handouts or tax cuts, either way, it has to be financed by more borrowing, which already puts strain. So is there a lot of money going around? Frankly, not really. But a lot of cost-effective and a lot of smart ways have to be thought of by the next government in terms of how this is going to be properly promulgated and implemented to help households.
I mean, Charles, some would say that the Conservatives are not offering a solution. There's a number of reasons why people are saying the Conservatives are not offering solutions, not least the fact there's no clear leadership at the moment, but we'll get onto that in just a moment. But another reason, perhaps, is that vast public spending is simply not in the Tory DNA, and therefore the Conservatives find it very difficult to propose more money to be offered to people?
Well, I mean, you're right. They are low tax and they like less intervention. Having said that, you've had one of the most interventionist governments in recent history. What's happened, you know, in relation to COVID, as I said, they've intervened in terms of the energy price, surging energy prices. But ideologically and fundamentally, what you'll see is if we do get a Liz Truss premiership, is they are against a windfall tax against the big oil companies. They think in the long term, it just damages the investment environment, puts businesses off coming here. What we need is a low tax environment where to attract businesses, but also we have to be smarter about our energy sources, about developing alternative energy sources, and the energy companies have to think about how they can deliver lower cost energy as well. But I mean, I come back to my point before, I think there has been a lot of public spending, and this is the problem. There isn't unprecedented taps of cash in the reserves in the government that are servicing huge levels of debt, which have high rates of interest. So we're just storing up more pain in the long term. Unfortunately, there is no easy solution to this. And this is something which is not just unique to the UK in terms of the surging energy crisis. This is something which is hitting countries across Europe. I mean, it does underlie, I think, you know, one thing which has become apparent is there's been too much reliance on Russia for our energy, and now we're paying the price for that.
Pushpin, Charles says that there has been intervention on the energy prices, and yet they are still rising, aren't they? I mean, they're still set to rise this winter. They've gone up from 1,200 on average last year to £3,400. That's a huge rise for most people. Why can it not happen that the energy companies themselves are forced to charge less, that proper caps are put on prices?
You can do that. There's no say how in terms of what can be done, what can't be done. The problem with that is putting a cap on prices to protect households. Yes, it will definitely, in terms of alleviating the cost to households and especially lower income households, will definitely protect them from paying the extras, the slated extra in terms of slated rise that's supposed to happen in October and in January as well, where we can see energy price cap increasing to upwards of £5,000. I think the most recent even came out at £6,000, we saw today. But putting the price cap also distorts, putting a cap on the price cap itself actually distorts price signals, because by doing so, in the sense, households and consumers won't be kind of wary about how much their energy bills are increasing, and with the same regular use that they're doing it now, doing as of now, and without seeing a kind of change in energy prices due to the cap, it distorts a lot of signals and adds a lot of fluctuations and adds a lot of knock-on effects to the economy. So that has a very dangerous effect going forwards as well. So putting that cap is not exactly feasible.
OK. And Stephen, some would say that the strikes have knock-on effects to the economy as well. The critics would say that they cause a wage-price spiral, of course, where rising wages would feed into this cycle of inflation.
I think, as we've seen in the past, industrial relations before COVID on many occasions have found a solution that's been satisfactory both for private companies and for the government. The situation we have at the moment is a feeling that people are actually losing their purchasing power at the same time of massive cost. Now, I think human nature is such that I think, particularly in the UK, a sense of what's fair. And there's a feeling at the moment that there are still large dividends coming out of what were state-owned assets, including some of the energy companies, are making enormous amounts of money for people that are not able to put it back. And therefore, the majority, I think the study is, there's a number of studies, but Citibank perceives that we could be as high as, I think it's 14% at the end, 12.2% by the end of the year, by 18.6% by January 2023. With these numbers coming out, workers feel they have no choice but to stop. And as we've said, the UK has got very strong labour laws that require very a big process of getting a majority to win the right to strike. What we're seeing is immense support for these strikes from the workers, and I would argue from the society as a large. Because I think, you know, and if we look at the situation, P&O ferries, where so many workers were sacked and caused such outrage, there's a feeling that big business can do what it likes, and the government is kind of colluding with the process. So for working men and women, the opportunity to withdraw their labour is frankly the last stand. Now, we would actively through this process not discourage business from coming to the UK, but also be in a position to encourage people back to the table. Everybody wants security in their jobs, fought to pay the bills, and then be in a position to go to work and give a performance. I think if we just touch on the rail strike, that feels very heavily politically motivated. And this hire and fire strategy that's been advocated by the Transport Minister is aggravating the situation. If we were dealing with just cost issues and a recognition that we've got an unprecedented post-COVID situation, a 40-year high in costs, let's get back to negotiating and let's find a solution. Of course, you know, when the Bank of England comes out and says workers shouldn't ask for pay rises, I think that doesn't reflect the reality of the men and women in the UK, and not just the UK, as Giles said. The rising cost is extremely high, but the UK has one of the freest markets. And with no caps, or caps being withdrawn or running out, we're seeing a moment where people are very scared. And, you know, let's just look at the issue of barristers, criminal barristers. They are not the worst paid workers in the world. Even they're coming out on strike. So I think we need to look at how we deal with this. We need to find a constructive way to negotiate. We would encourage employers, government to sit down, recognise that this is an unprecedented moment, that solutions and confidence in workers and the businesses they work for is vital.
Okay.
And not get strike.
Let's just let Giles pick up that. Stephen's saying people are scared. This is an unprecedented moment. Giles, where's the government in all this? Where's the leadership? We're seeing Boris Johnson, the Prime Minister, on his second holiday of the summer. He seems to have signed off and just passed on all of this to whoever takes over. That's not happening until September the 5th. There's going to be a lot of damage potentially done between now and then. And we're not seeing any policies announced by the two prospective candidates. Do you feel that there is, would you agree, there is a lack of leadership?
I think you're right. There is a vacuum and it is a danger spot for the Conservative Party. To some extent, the problem facing Boris Johnson is because he's going to be out of number 10 in 2 weeks, it's not morally responsible to be taking decisions which the next prime minister then has to take on. So there is a sense of trying to do the right thing and defer things on. But to your point, we've got a situation which could start moving at breakneck speed, and it is a danger point. Now, let's work on the assumption that if the polls are right, we're going to have a Liz Truss premiership. It's something that she's going to need to get to grips to very quickly, because if this does start spreading out a lot more, I mean, we're used to the sort of standard underground rail strikes often annually, but as it starts spreading out, if it does start spreading out beyond, you know, criminal barristers, then you may see public patience, the public lose their patience, and you know, then the government is going to be in a real danger spot, because whatever the rights and the wrongs of the situation, people will at that point, I think, if it does happen, start to blame the government. So they're going to need to find and come in with some kind of solution or some kind of way to break the deadlock and the impasse. You know, I think historically, often when these strikes have been confined to the rail network, people are, you know, it hasn't really damaged the government's stature and standing, but this has the potential to be very different and certainly unprecedented during my lifetime. I think, you know, in relation to the rail sector, a lot of people sort of say, well, you know, you often people say this is just going to accelerate the movement towards more automation, driverless trains. Obviously, a lot of people were working from home during COVID, so they sort of say, well, I can take the one-off strikes, but if it does spread and becomes the norm, then yeah, incredibly problematic with all the other backdrops, the UK looking like it's heading into recession, cost of living crisis, it could be the perfect storm for the new prime minister and be a gift to the Labour Party.
Absolutely. Pushpin, what sort of solution do you think England, Britain needs?
Definitely a lot more targeted solutions in terms of what can be done and what can be not to at least alleviate the cost of living crisis. What was said before about the perfect storm is definitely a perfect description of what's happening to the UK right now in terms of external factors concerning supply-side shocks, including the war in Ukraine. You've got rising energy prices initially due to kind of suppressed supply and now due, again, to energy commodity inflation. And on top of that, you've got a cost of living crisis as well. And that is going to be followed with economic downturn, as we can see through Q2's figures. We saw a 0.1% contraction, and it's very likely that the UK is going into recession. And I think the priority should be to be helping households and lower income, especially lower income households, in terms of trying to deal with this whole idea of this whole phenomenon of a downturn along with soaring prices. And definitely, there's a lot of things coming into play right now in terms of how you can't distort price signals while at the same time helping households, while at the same time, once more, managing the books, which is what the ex-chancellor actually did, was trying to do as part of his primary motivations. A lot of targeted handouts would be required, and a lot of effective and timely measures have to be are required as well. But clearly, that's not the case right now, given the whole idea of a vacuum, and we still have yet to see who's yet to come into the hot seat in 2 weeks. But yeah.
Absolutely. I mean, that would be a big point as well. Stephen, just lastly, what happens if these strikes don't bring about the pay rises that workers are demanding?
Well, I think there's a feeling, certainly across all sectors in the UK labour movement, that cooperation and collaboration about what the message is and what the challenges are. So I think we're going to see more challenges when it comes to workers voting for strike action until we start to see some constructive settlements. These issues about, and of course the rail strike gets the biggest profile, but there's a lot in that package. It's not just money, it's about changing the way the rail industry works. I think we need to get people back into moving, and transport is critical. I think the situation which we've seen is in the private sector, lots of really big returns in the container markets, in the supply chain. But let's not forget, supply chain's driven by demand. And if you don't give people money to spend and they're worried about, one, their jobs and meeting their bills, how are we going to drive the economies? We perceive that there will be a recession. And again, we'll need to drive out of that. So I think unions, workers, I certainly feel, and let's be clear, this rail strike is far from over. There is a solidarity across different categories of workers. And as I say, it's unprecedented
We're going to have to leave it there.
Sorry.
Apologies for jumping in there, Stephen, but we are going to have to leave it there. And many thanks for joining us to all of our guests today, Stephen Cotton, Pushpin Singh and Giles Kenningham. And thank you, too, for watching. You can see the programme again anytime by visiting our website, aljazeera.com. And for further discussion, do go to our Facebook page. That's facebook.com/AJInsideStory. And you can also join the conversation on Twitter. We are at AJInsideStory. From me, Laura Kyle, and the whole team here, it's bye for now.